Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Whew, there's a lot of people in here, and when I get up behind the podium, I'm always nervous because besides being addicted to alcohol and drugs, I'm addicted to approval. And, you know, I just want you all to love and adore me. And when you walk out that door, you know, I want you to say, did you hear what she said? And at any rate, if I had any words of wisdom, what on earth am I doing occupying a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous? But anyway, I'm really grateful to be here, and I thank everybody from the conference. I'm telling you, it's just, you know, you just don't think that you'll be knee-walking drunk and be able to stay at the Marriott in Hilton Head, South Carolina, you know, and with an ocean view. And that's a long way from where I came from, and I thank you so much, and the hospitality has just been wonderful. Thank you. Thank you. Alcoholics Anonymous has really been good to me. And I heard since I've been here, you know, about the treasures that we get in the program as Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to introduce three of my treasures. My husband, Dave. Would you please stand up, Dave, and let the people see you. My son, James. And our daughter-in-law, Kelly. Thank you. I loved what Don said last night, and when he was talking about his sons, and it's really nice for, you know, for your children to just call and just to talk, and that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm really grateful for my family. One of the things I'd like to start off talking about is about feelings, and this is the thing that I was the most terrified with when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Was my feelings, because I never could stand the way I felt inside. That seemed to always be the problem, is how I felt. And Maggie was alluding to talking about being Southern born and raised. Well, I am Southern born and raised, and I was born and raised in Texas. And I am not only Southern born and raised, but I am Southern Baptist born and raised. And one of the things that I want to make clear is before I even get into my talk, because one of the things that I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is I am not here to knock and condemn anybody or anything. I think those are my old ideas, because one of the things that I have learned as an alcoholic is I'm very opinionated. And I just want to say that I am not here to knock other 12-step fellowship. I am not here to knock religion. I'm not here to knock anything. I'm just here to tell you my story the way I see it. And one of the things I've learned from Clancy is that I have a disease of perception. And I don't see things the way they really are. And because of this disease, my perception of reality is distorted. So what I do when I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous is I need to get a reality check. So I always need you guys to help me stay in touch with reality, because my perception of it is distorted. So I just want to say that up front, is to talk, when I'm talking about feelings and the things that happened to me are the way I heard them, that doesn't mean that was necessarily the way they were. Also, before I get started, because one of the things I do is I get bounding into the story, and a lot of times I forget to say where I am today. And I think it's real important that I talk about where I am today, because one of the things that I learned when I came to the program as Alcoholics Anonymous was to suit up and show up no matter what. And that's kind of what I've been doing for the past month. And when I sat here, we didn't even get in till last night till about 8 o'clock, and I was really tired because I'd been up since 4 o'clock and had been at an airport at 5:30 yesterday morning, didn't get here till 8. So I was really tired. But I sat up here with Maggie in the front row and just sort of started to feel the warmth of a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then Don began to talk. And I knew that everything was okay. But I have kind of allowed my job to get in the way in the last month. I have felt stressed, overwhelmed, and I have been in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I want to tell you that's all I have done is just been there. and I have suited up and showed up, but I have not been able to be rid. My head just wouldn't turn off. And it's just so marvelous to be here, because I told Dave this morning when I got up, I said, you know, I slept through the night, all the way through the night. I didn't wake up this morning and my jaws didn't hurt because I've been gritting my teeth. But what happens to me when I do things like that is, I don't know if there's any other intense alcoholics in the room. There's probably not. I'm probably the only one. But I'm intense. And what happens is when I get going, and the more intense I get into this character defect of mine that I'm sure none of you have either. And that is, as I begin to manage and control. And as I sat there last night, and the energy flowed through me, and I began to feel the feeling that I'll feel in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I began to see where I've been the last month. And you know what? I'm so grateful for Don last night, because he began to talk about how powerless we are. And you know, all of a sudden, I just began to be so relieved. And it's so nice this morning to stand up behind this podium and be powerless. You know, there's not one thing I can do from South Carolina to what's going on in California. And you know what? That's okay. And I'm real grateful for that. And I just, you know, I just really am grateful to be here. But because I have the disease of alcoholism, and because I'm in a 12-step program that I love more than anything in the world, and that's the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, it doesn't mean that I don't slip back in to that old behavior, because I do. And I was real grateful last night to be reminded of that. At any rate, I was one of these people that had these feelings deep down inside of me. And I always had this feeling that there was no way that I would ever be good enough. And I can remember growing up in those Baptist Sunday schools, and they were talking about me being born a sinner. And I thought, man, I'm born messed up. I mean, I didn't even start right. And I just never could feel like I got past that. It just seemed like I never could, you know, I never could get there. I just never could be good enough. And they talked about a God to me that was terrifying. I can remember my mother saying things like, we live in a God-fearing home. And you know, I'm so grateful to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, because I live in a God-loving home today. And I did. I feared God. And I just started to develop this attitude of what's the use? Because deep down inside of me, I knew that I would never, ever be enough. And I used to have these feelings that it didn't matter what I felt like. The only thing that was important was that I looked good and the neighbors didn't know. And those were it was like how you felt or what went on was not important. It was just to make sure that whatever other people thought would be the most important thing. And that is probably the most difficult character defect I have today to overcome, because I still become more concerned about what you think of me than what I think of me. At any rate, I would sit in these Baptist Sunday schools and they would tell me about a God. And I would look at I would think of this God, and this God lived way out in the sky. And this God had long white robes, and he had a long beard, and he had a clipboard. And of course, I was an alcoholic in the making, so I was selfish and self-centered. So I knew that the only person he was paying any attention to was me. And I just, you know, and it was kind of like, you know, in at Christmas time when we hear the songs, you know, about Santa Claus, like making a list, checking it twice, gonna find out who's naughty and nice. Well, that's kind of like what I thought God was doing. He just had this clipboard, and he was just checking it off. And then I would sit in these congregations, and these preachers would scream and yell, and they would hit the podium, and then they would lean out, and they would point a finger, and they said, if you've thought it, you've done it. And I don't know about you, but I was an alcoholic in the making, and I thought a lot. So, you know, it was just like I was sure that I was doomed. There is no way I'm ever going to make this deal. And then they would say things to me like, you shouldn't feel that way. So I shouldn't feel that way. So there's something wrong with me because I feel that way. And I just began to develop an attitude of what's the use, and there's no way I'll ever, ever be enough. And that's kind of the feelings that I had deep down inside. I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it tells me where to find God. And it says God is deep within. And it tells me how to find God. And it says to search fearlessly. And I'm so grateful that you gave me a God that no matter where I go, He goes. And I don't have to look anywhere because He's already here. I'm so grateful for that, because today, thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I never ever have to walk alone. I hope your higher power and you feel about each other the way I feel about my higher power, because you see, today I know that my higher power just absolutely loves me to pieces. And that's so neat. Also, I have a higher power who has an absolute dynamite sense of humor. And one of the things I'd like to do is to share that sense of humor with you. My name is Polly. It's not Paula or Pauline. It's Polly. And I'm here to tell you, if you're a little girl with a name like Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. You know, it's going to be things like Polly wants a cracker, Polly Wally doodle all the day, and all those cute things. Now, I don't know about any of you, but you see, I'm a sensitive alcoholic. And I don't like to be teased, and I don't like to be laughed at. And I've heard a lot in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that people talk a lot about, you know, their parents and things that happened to them. I've certainly had things happen to me, too. But the worst trauma I have felt in my life is how other kids treated me. And I just seem to be one of those people that other kids just always teased and carried on with. And I just suffered so from the remarks of other kids. And I hated being named Polly. And I hated being named being teased. And one of the things that I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no negatives in God's world. One of the things I've learned is my perception is negative. See, I perceive things as negative, but what I've learned is there's no negatives in God's world. Just because I perceive it as a negative doesn't mean that it is. And what I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that everything that happens to me ends up having a positive result, even though at the time I thought it was the very worst thing that could happen to me. See, today I love having the name Polly. Because, you know, there's not very many Pollys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. I didn't know I had a disease called alcoholism. I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have cancer or heart disease or something. Because I knew I was dying, and I just wanted to die as something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift, because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. 10 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I don't know about your higher power, but my higher power has a dynamite sense of humor. Because I'm here to tell you, you're not going to walk around with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. You have to learn to lighten up. One of the things is that I've turned into a brat about the whole thing, because at first it was like, oh my God, I just can't take that name. And, you know, I've got an old-fashioned guy who's Southern, too, and I think it would have just broke his heart. At any rate, it's real fun now because I've just turned into a brat. You know, I just love to walk up to somebody that doesn't know who I am and just stick my hand out and say, "Hi, my name's Polly Pistol." And just watch them stand there and try to get it together to talk to me. Wonderful. 12 and 12 has a rule, a 62 in there called, just don't take yourself so damn seriously. Just lighten up. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says we absolutely insist on being happy. And I believe that's what we came here for. And I'm not to tell you that I didn't cry. And I'm going to talk about that too. And I don't ever want to forget that I cried. But thank God we can laugh. Thank God we can laugh. I am the only child. And I believe because I was an only child, not only did my parents love me, they absolutely adored me. But I'm here to tell you that I am a person that has a disease, and it's spiritual in nature. And because I have a disease, and it's spiritual in nature, I could not feel that. I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and people began to tell me things like, don't listen to what people did. Listen to how they felt about what they did. And don't listen to exactly what happened to people. Listen to how they felt about what happened to them. And I began to do that in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would hear people stand up from behind the podium and they would talk about their alcoholic mother or their alcoholic father. And I began to identify with them. Because you see, I'm like what Don talked about last night. You can get to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous without coming from alcoholic parents. My parents are not alcoholics. In fact, my mother is 73 years old. And my mother has 73 years of sobriety. And my mother is not the least bit impressed with my 13 and a half years of sobriety. Because she says she feels like if you'd have just never drank, you'd have never gotten that mess anyway. So you can get here without having alcoholic parents. But I began to listen to what people were talking about, and I began to feel the same way they felt. And they would talk about how they felt about their alcoholic father and the things they did. And I began to identify with those feelings. Because you see, my father didn't drink alcohol. But I truly believe to this day that the only difference between my dad and I is my dad just forgot to take a drink. Everything else was there. See, my dad was one of these men that had fits of rage. And he was just like a periodic alcoholic with these fits of rage. And my mother used to say things to me like, "Polly, just be nice. Now, if you'll just be nice, Daddy won't have one of his fits." But you see, Daddy always had one of his fits. And when Daddy had one of his fits, furniture would fly, and he would curse and yell, and he would knock my mother around. And for some reason, I always felt like it had something to do with me. Had I just been better or done better, then Daddy wouldn't have had one of his fits. And I used to look at my dad, just like I've heard people who looked at their alcoholic father, and I'd say, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." But the irony of it was, I became just like him. And I would look over at my mother, and I would have so much disgust, and I would look at her, and I would say, "You're such a wimp. Why don't you stand up for yourself? How can you let him treat you that way?" And I would look at her and I would say, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." And the irony of it was, I became just like her. Because I have a disease called alcoholism, and because I only pick up the negatives that are around me, somehow the positives just sort of leave, I became the worst of both of my parents. I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous an angry wimp. I was like the worst of both my parents. I was one of these people that always was a recipient of sarcasm. Does anybody know what sarcasm is? These cute little remarks that are supposed to be funny, but they rip your guts out. That was the kind of I just seemed like people loved to do that to me. And you know, and people would throw me one of those zingers, you know, and they would say, "Oh, geez, Polly, I'm sorry. Did that hurt?" And then I would say, "Oh, no, that's okay." And I would swallow it down. And I have an AA sponsor, and she says, whatever goes down's got to come up. And so I would swallow that anger and rage down, and then I would go home, and I would take it out on my two little boys. But to the rest of the world, I just looked so nice. But you see, I wasn't nice, because I would rage and holler and do all the things that my father had done to my two little boys. When I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned that I had a disease, and it's spiritual in nature. And because I have a disease and it's spiritual in nature, the book talks about me being cut off from the sunshine of the Spirit. And because I have a disease that's spiritual in nature, I just seem to take in the negative things that were around me, and I didn't feel the positive things. And because I have a disease and it's spiritual in nature, it would not have mattered what my parents did. It wouldn't have mattered how much they loved me. It wouldn't have mattered how much they did for me. It would not have mattered, because the book tells me that nothing is enough. Nothing would have been enough for me, because I suffer from a malady that is spiritual in nature. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer, and I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. And a lot of people talk in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous about, you know, the third step, about turning their will and their life over to God. Well, you know, I'm one of these people that I would have turned my will and my life over to anybody that would take it. I have never wanted to be responsible for me. That's been the thing I've had to learn to do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I would gladly let anybody take care of me. That's what I wanted. At any rate, I had married a SAC pilot. And he not only was going to be away from home and gone a lot, he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I did not know how to take care of myself. And by now I've got two small children. And I don't know how to cope. We got stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And if you've never been there, don't go. It's no fun. It's absolutely the armpit of the world. And I've got these two little boys. I have no idea how to be a parent. I don't know how to cope. I don't know what to do with little children. I don't know how to cope. And it's not like you can tell them to go outside and play, because it's 50 below zero. And I don't know how to be a mom. And these two little boys are driving me crazy. And I just don't know what to do with myself. And I'm having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. So I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, take these. From 1962 until 1977, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nimitol. And I'm here to tell you, if you take those kind of drugs and drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. And and I was not an active alcoholic. When I started drinking alcohol was when we first entered the Air Force. And we got to go, and I don't know if they still do this, but, you know, this was a long time ago. We used to go to these little classes in the Air Force, and they would tell you how to be a lady. And, you know, being Southern-born and raised, I was born to be a lady. And they tell you all these things and how not to upset the jock. You know, you don't do anything to ruin his career. And we learned all these etiquette classes and all these kind of things. So when you went to the club and you went out to drink, you were always to behave like a lady. And I could do that. I could behave like a lady. Because you see, I had been taught well how to look good. It absolutely was unimportant about how you felt, but you were to look good at all times. I did not go and take my first drink and anything magic happened. I really identified with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous in that my disease was just a process. I didn't take a drink and then this magic thing happened. It's just one day it was fun and one day it wasn't. And that's just kind of the way it was. It was just a process. I know that I felt real betrayed by the Baptist Church because they told me that people who drank were bad, and these people weren't bad. These were good people, and these were people that I would grow to depend on and care for. They were good people. I'd like to tell you a little about what happened as my disease of alcoholism began to progress. If I went to the officers' club, it became obvious, or to a party, that my disease, I didn't know it was a disease, but it became obvious that if I drank a lot, I didn't know what was going to happen to me. So if I would go out, I can still feel this feeling today. I don't know if any of you had to drink this way, but to just sit there at a party and sip a drink. And the agitation that goes on with just having to sit there and sip a drink and just can't wait till this whole thing is over and I can go home and drink as much as I want. And I would go home and drink as much as I want and pass out on my sofa. That's what I am, folks, a couch potato alcoholic. I'm just one of these people that laid on my sofa and drank alcohol, watching soap operas, and listening to Joan Baez sing the blues. Poor me. I talk about being a couch potato alcoholic, and my youngest son is a member of the program at Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to hear him talk. And to hear James talk about my drinking is a lot different than how I felt about my drinking. And James talks about being a little boy and that his dad is gone, because his dad is gone most all the time. And his mother is passed out on the sofa. And he talks about the fear and the terror of being a little boy and walking back and forth in front of that sofa, gripped with such terror because his dad is gone and he's afraid his mother is dead. That's the disease of alcoholism. The disease of alcoholism is a family disease. And anybody who lives with the disease of alcoholism is affected. At any rate, I'd like to tell you a few things that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. One night I was passed out on my sofa. And if it was 8 o'clock at night or 7 o'clock at night, I was always passed out on my sofa. And this night my husband jerked me up and he sat me at the kitchen table and he said, alcohol and pills are our problem. And if you just didn't drink and if you just didn't take these pills, everything would be okay. And he started pouring out the booze and he started throwing the pills down the garbage disposal. And I just sort of sat there in my comatose state watching him, and when he was done, I just wouldn't pass back out on the sofa. Now, my disease had progressed to I ceased to go to sleep and wake up. I passed out and came to. I'd also taken to drinking things like vanilla extract, NyQuil, and Scope. Now, I don't know how I learned to do this, folks, because I had not been here. I've learned a lot of things since I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I learned how to do that all by myself. And, you see, in my keen alcoholic thinking, I thought you couldn't tell if I was drinking if you couldn't smell me. You see, I thought it had something to do with smell. And so I don't know what I thought about behavior, but I thought it had all to do with smell. So at any rate, I came to that morning about 2 o'clock, and I was just too sick, and I just didn't think that I could drive to the 7-Eleven and get a bottle of NyQuil. And that night, I found myself crawling around my garage floor, going through the plastic bags, taking out those bottles, and turning them up to just get one drop. I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. I absolutely had to have a drink of alcohol or I would surely die. And that night my husband caught me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I absolutely had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I had several car wrecks, and the third car wreck would bring me to treatment for the first time. I totaled an automobile in Irving, Texas. And to make a long story short, I'm a blackout drinker, and a lot of things had happened. But what happened was that I'm going to tell you about is I got out of my car, called the police, and told them that my car had been stolen. And sure enough, here come the police, and my husband's with them. And I'm taken to the Irving police station, and I get to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he said, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" And on the way home, he said, "Polly, there's a hospital, and it's not far from our house, and I wish you would go." And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. And it was a 7-day detox. And in this detox, they took us to a lot of meetings during that 7 days. And I really liked what I saw in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But there was just something way deep down inside of me that just said, "Polly, people like you just don't become alcoholics." And while I was in this treatment center, we have what we call in Texas a jitterhouse romance. You know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. Well, I had me one of those. And I walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because you see, now what my problem was sobriety. I can't live with the feelings of being sober. I can't live with what happened to me in that motel room. I can't live with the kind of mother I've become. And I can't live with the kind of wife I've become. I just can't stand to live inside my own skin. And you know, I've heard in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I just didn't know if I could live sober. I couldn't live with the feelings inside sober. When that 7-day detox was up, I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked into a motel. Because I truly believe I could not live inside my own skin one more minute. You know, I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an Eskimo in your life. And an Eskimo is someone who brings us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, it may be a nudge from the judge. It may be that your wife kicked you out. It may be that your employer says if you don't sober up, you don't have a job. But somehow, some way, we get to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life. And you know, she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And that day she said something came over her. Well, you see, today I know what that something was. That something was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't shut the door all the way to the motel room. It was on a half latch. And she pushed that door open, and she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here tonight. Or this morning. But I need to tell you about the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for a lot of years before I began to feel that feeling that we talk about the higher power, and about how people in Alcoholics Anonymous talk about God as they understand me. Because you see, I'm one of these people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that's a real slow learner. And I just didn't get that feeling. I didn't walk in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and get it. I just wasn't one of those people. And you know how we go to the meeting after the meeting and everybody tells her, can you top this story? Well, you know, I wasn't like Don. I didn't go to prison. I never even had a speeding ticket. I even had a wreck drunk with my young son and they didn't even give me a ticket. I mean to tell you, I didn't have any of those, can you top this story? And I had all my affairs sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it was like, I didn't have one of those, can you top this story? And how do you talk about being a couch potato alcoholic? So my can you top this story was, well, I was pronounced dead on arrival. Feeling nothing. I was absolutely not in touch with God's grace. I was not in touch with the grace of life. To be graced, to have a free gift, to be graced with God's love. I just was not in touch with that. I had to hit a bottom in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that was every bit as devastating as the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and drugs. And that was behind sex and relationships. I was so empty inside. And there was just nothing in me. I absolutely needed your approval to just validate my very existence. And I would have done anything for you to love and accept me. I would have done anything. And I had to destroy me one more time sober just because I just would have done anything for you to love me. And you know, it was people in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that just kept talking and talking about the things that Don talked about last night. Polly, it's an inside job. There's no way that anybody's ever going to be able to love you enough to make you okay. It's going to have to come from within. And I had to self-destruct in this program because I was so desperate to be loved and I was trying to take it from the outside in instead of from the inside out. Along about 5 years of sobriety, I'm sitting in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, and a wonderful feeling comes over me. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't any big flash of lightning. It wasn't any big deal. It was just a warm feeling. And the feeling was, everything's going to be okay. And you know, most of the time, I walk around with that feeling. Everything's going to be okay. It took me a long time to share this from a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous because, you see, I'm a person who needs approval. And I was afraid if you knew the truth, you wouldn't love me. But you see, for a lot of years, I walked around in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I talked the talk. But I didn't walk the walk. You know, I would tell you about this higher power because I thought that's what you wanted to hear. Because, see, if you wouldn't approve of me if I didn't talk it the way I was supposed to talk it. So I acted like I had it, and I didn't. And I talked like I had it, and I didn't. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had this fear down inside of me because, you see, what it was all about was fear. And the fear was, is that you're going to find out that I don't have it. But worst of all, the fear was, is that you have it and I'll never have it. One of the things that I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that I'm not unique, that I'm typical. And today I share that from podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you see, I believe that I am typical. And I believe that there are people in rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous who come for meetings year after year, and they don't have that feeling either. And if you're one of those people, I want to share with you to just keep coming back, just suit up and show up, and just please, please don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Because, you see, I can make a promise to you that if you keep suiting up and showing up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, it will happen to you. Because, you see, the reason I can make that promise is because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous makes that promise. It says in the promises that all these promises are being fulfilled, some of them faster, some of them slower. that they will all materialize if we work for them. So just please keep coming back and don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the main object of this book is to find a power greater than yourself that can solve your problems. Just keep suiting up and showing up, and it will happen to you. At any rate, after I left that hospital, I ended up in a psychiatric hospital in Arlington, Texas, and then I ended up in a hospital in Dallas, Texas. And my husband came to pick me up in the psychiatric hospital, and he said to me, "Polly, it'll be real nice if you go to this hospital voluntarily, but it's really not necessary. Because, you see, I have a piece of paper here signed by a Fort Worth judge that says you're going anyway." So, you see, people like me who don't become alcoholic had just been court committed to treatment, and my papers read that I was a detriment to myself and others. And on April the 11th of 1977, I entered a hospital in Dallas, Texas, and a beautiful man took me in his arms as I stepped off that elevator, and he said, "Come on in, Polly, because we're going to love you sober." You know, and if you're here today and you're new, just come on in, because we're going to love you sober. And we will love you before you can love you. And that's what they did to me. People in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous loved me until I could love me. When I left that treatment center, we were given a little prescription to stay sober. And on that prescription it said, talk to God, read the Big Book, go to meetings, get a sponsor. And the very last line on that prescription said, don't ever watch, don't ever listen to the way a man talks, just watch the way he walks. And that's what I do today in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I watch how a person walks. You know, I'm the kind of person that wants to stick with the winners. So I hang out with the people who are busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if you've got the gift of gab, you can get behind a podium and you can say just about anything. But you know, it's what do you do day by day? How do you work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? And that's what I watch. I watch the people who are setting up the meeting. I watch the people who are making the coffee. I watch the people who are going to sit in a corner with somebody who's in trouble. I'm watching the person who takes the time to give the most valuable thing they have to give, and that's themselves. The most valuable thing that I have to give to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is me. That's the most valuable thing that I have to give. Because, you see, that's what you've given to me. What you've given to me is me. And that was the very thing that I never had, was me. When I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a whiner. I'm here to tell you that I am also a recovering whiner. I am one of these people that walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would walk around saying, "But you don't understand me." I was absolutely the most misunderstood human in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was told to get into the 12 and 12 and to burn the 11-step prayer in my brain because it had absolutely nothing to do with me being understood. It had only to do that I be understanding. And it had nothing to do that I be loved. It had only to do that I be loving. And it had nothing to do that I be forgiven, only that I be forgiving. You see, folks, I had it totally mixed up and turned around. I had sat all my life waiting for you to love me enough to be okay. You know, that's why we drive psychiatrists and psychologists crazy. Because they're sitting around saying, you know, you can do it, and you know, you deserve it. Well, let me tell you something, folks. I hope you're never sitting next to me if I get what I deserve. Because you you know, thank God I have, you know, I don't have a just God. I have a merciful God. Because if I ever got what I deserved, believe me, I would not be in a room at the Marriott living like I'm living today. That's not what happens to people like me. But thank God I have a merciful God. The thing that I have learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous
is that I have a spiritual disease. I suffer from a spiritual malady. And the only way that I can heal from a spiritual malady is reach outside myself and help another person. And the more I reach outside myself and help another person, I begin to heal from a spiritual illness. I cannot wait for it to happen. I must reach out and be healed. And when I talk about my program of Alcoholics Anonymous to another alcoholic, I get to hear me say how I stay sober. And that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I must heal from a spiritual malady from the inside out. I must give it out in order to get it back. And you know, when I was in those Baptist Sunday schools, they used to say things to me like, "You'll reap what you sow." And see, that's what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. And if you're sitting in this room this morning and you don't feel like you're getting out of this program what you think you ought to be getting out of it, why don't you check what you're putting into it? Because you see, one of the things I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is I'm going to get back in direct proportion to that what I put into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Whatever I put into this deal is what I'm going to get out. And you know, I want it all. I don't know what kind of alcoholic you are, but I want it all. And I love being a part of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so grateful when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and they gave me the big book. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, "Most of my problems are of my own making." And you know something, folks? That's the good news. Because if my problems are of anybody else's making, I'm screwed. You see, I always thought that my problems were because I was an only child. It was the U.S. Air Force. It was because I lived here, there, and the other place. You see, I was a victim. I had myself a victim to circumstances, to people, places, and things. And the good news is that today I am no longer a victim. I am the maker of my problems. And as long as I am the maker of my problems, I have a shot at changing. With the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the 12 steps, and a loving God, I got a shot at changing. And if you haven't thought that this program is about change, maybe you better read the book again. Because the book talks about a psychic change, a profound change, a total change. The book talks a lot about change. So the book tells me that I come to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in order to stay sober and to live the kind of life that I truly believe that God wants me to live today, that I must be willing to change. And thank God for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps, because I have learned the changes. And some days those changes are pretty good, and some days, you know, they're not so good. I was married in this program for 22 years. And you know how we go to meetings and people get right in your face and they tell you things you don't want to hear? And they're not interested in whether you want to hear them or not. They just tell them to you anyway. At any rate, I had been married to a man who had congestive heart failure. And you know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about us being selfish and self-centered alcoholics. Well, I'm selfish and self-centered, because when I sat and a doctor told me how ill my husband was, the only thoughts I had at that time were who's going to take care of me and these two kids. And thanks to a program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm grateful that I don't feel that way today. But anyway, after I had been married for 3 years, it was very obvious that this marriage was not going to work. And people got in my face in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they said things to me like, "Polly, your husband is not dying from congestive heart failure. You are. And why don't you just drop the rock?" At any rate, when I was 3 years sober, my husband and I divorced. Now, I want to tell you how important I am in this man's life. 6 months later, he remarried a much younger woman, and he's never been healthier or happier since. So I found out he had a higher power, and it wasn't me. And I have found that out a lot in this program, that you have a higher power and it's not me. When I was 3.5 years sober, I married my best friend. And Dave and I had known each other since I was 6 months sober and he was 1.5 years sober. And Dave knew all about me. He knew the good and he knew the bad. And Dave had moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and he came back to Fort Worth on a visit. And he told me, he said, "Polly, I love you. But," he says, "you have to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you." And you see, things like that aren't supposed to happen to people like me. Dave has been my greatest lesson in unconditional love. He has loved me no matter what. Now, I haven't done so well in this marriage. I haven't had that kind of unconditional love. Dave has taught that to me. You see, I'm one of these people that has a lot of problems with jealousy and envy. And I've suffered a lot with that, being sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And see, I think Dave is just the greatest guy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, of course, I think all the other women think that, too. And I'm here to tell you, folks, I sponsor the most gorgeous women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're all younger than me. And worst of all, they're all thinner than me. And they adore Dave, and Dave adores them. And I had a lot of problems with that. But I've learned in the program with Alcoholics Anonymous that jealousy is just my own insecurities. And when those icky feelings come over me, they have nothing to do with my husband or those beautiful women. They have only to do with my relationship with God. Because you see, when my relationship with God is in order, then I don't have those icky feelings. And today, that's my barometer. When those icky feelings come over me, I don't go look at Dave, and I don't go look at those beautiful women. I just check out my relationship with God. Dave and I are two different people. Dave is one of these kind of quiet, even kind of guys. And he's one of these kind of guys that likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back. And he likes to go up into high Sierras and walk on top of mountains. And that just doesn't pull my chain. That's just not my thing. I'm one of these kind of people that I'm just in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just doing things in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if there's a committee, I don't want to be on your committee. I want to be the chairman of your committee. That's the kind of, I mean, I'm just buzzing in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But what we've learned to do here in this program is to let each other go. You see, Dave and I, neither one knew how to have a relationship. We both knew how to take a hostage, but neither one of us knew how to have a relationship. And it's been in this program and help people in this program that Dave and I have learned how to have a relationship. And we have learned how to let each other go. And you know, you just go out there and you be the very best Dave you can be. And you go be the very best Polly you can be. And if we're the very best Dave and the very best Polly we can be, then we're going to come together and we're going to love each other and we're going to support each other. And that's been the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because you see, I never trusted anyone enough to let them go. But it was in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that you showed me a God that I could trust and a God that I could love. And by giving me a God that I could trust and a God that I could love, I was able to love a man and be able to trust him and to let him go too. And I'm so grateful for that because I never, ever knew about love. I just didn't know how to love. And it was here that I learned that love is free, that love is for fun and for free. And you don't hang on to it, you let it go. On September the 23rd, I got to experience of this of 1990, I got to experience more love in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous than I thought that was possible. Because, you see, there was the good news and the bad news on September the 23rd. And the bad news was, as I turned 50, the good news was, is how much I'm loved. And Dave threw a surprise party for me. And there was like 50 members of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous standing there saying surprise. And I have never felt that much love in all my life. You know, I didn't know there was that much love. To be loved that much. The miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so grateful. I want to quickly tell you about my two sons. I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and I just didn't know if I could stay sober. Because you see, I realized how traumatized my two sons were and what the disease of alcoholism had done to my children. And I realized when I got sober that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict. And I used to walk around meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd say, this just isn't fair. It just isn't fair. And people would look at me and they would say, Polly, you may be the only big book James ever reads. Just suit up and show up. And my oldest boy is one of our Al-Anons. And you know our Al-Anons need one of us or they don't have a purpose for living. And Russ was the one who took care of me. And I don't know when it's the last time you've seen a passed out alcoholic, but we don't breathe too good. And you know, many is the time I've come to with this young man and he would be screaming, Mom, wake up, are you dead? And me to come to and see the fear in his eyes. And you know, for the past 13 and a half years, I haven't had to come to and see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes because of something I'm doing. And for that, I've been overpaid in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, what would a good Al-Anon do if their alcoholic sobered up but go marry a practicing alcoholic? And she sobered up. And one more time, my son didn't have a purpose for living. And my daughter-in-law called me up on the phone and she told me that my son had taken a bottle of sleeping pills and had cut up his arms. And by then Dave and I were living in California. And I wanted to get on the next thing smoking and get to Texas and save my son. And it was rooms like this and people like you that said, Polly, you just suit up and show up and you let God take care of us. Well, to make a long story short, God moved Russ to Sheboygan, Michigan, and he and the lady in Texas divorced. And I lovingly like to say that Russ ran into his drug of choice, which was a woman. And they got married, and they moved to Asbury Park, New Jersey, and the hell began. And my daughter-in-law is calling me up on the phone because she doesn't understand why Russ hates himself so much. She doesn't understand why Russ wants to destroy himself, but I understand because, you see, that's the way I used to feel about me. And I understood what that desperation was like. And my son just couldn't seem to find this program, and he couldn't seem to find the program of Al-Anon. And for the next 11 months, he would try in many different ways to destroy himself. It was people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous who reached out to my son. I so believe in the power of prayer because it was rooms like this and people like you that would come up to me after a meeting and they'd say, Polly, we're going to pray for Russ. I happened to be speaking at a meeting in Brentwood one night and I was just so desperate and I was talking about my son Russ. And this man walked up to me and he said, I am compelled to write your son a letter. Because my mother and my sister committed suicide, and I am compelled to write your son a letter because he needs to know how that feels. And there's a man in this program by the name of Barney M., and Barney and Russ are in the same profession. And Barney started reaching out to my son, Russ. I got invited to speak at a conference in Albany, Georgia. And I was speaking there. And that day, I had found out that my son had put a pair of scissors in his gut. And I was just desperate. You know, I knew God was big enough to take care of my disease, but I just wasn't sure that God was big enough to take care of Russ. I just didn't know if he could do it. And this man came up to me, and he had over 40 years of sobriety. And he said, Polly, you and I need to talk. And he sat down, and he says, Polly, You need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you need to read the chapter to the agnostic, and you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And that is not your son. That is God's son. And he's been given to you on loan. And what God does with his kids is none of your business. And by God sending this man to help me, and a loving God in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to release my son. And that was in October, and on November, and in November, my son entered the program of Al-Anon. And that's been 2 years and 3 months ago. And Russ hasn't tried to kill himself. Now, you know, this is a program of progress, not perfection. And it's no mistake that I live on the West Coast and Russ lives on the East Coast. Because, you see, if I was any closer, I'm sure I would just ruin his life. Because, you see, Russ doesn't do it my way. Russ goes to one meeting a week, whether he needs it or not, and that's not enough meetings for me. I had the opportunity of visiting both my sons in September, and one of the things that I get to be reminded of is of the disease of alcoholism, and that it is a family disease, and that people who live with the disease of alcoholism are affected by it. Because, you see, no matter what happens, and no matter how much Russ's life improves, he's got some scars on his wrists that will always be there. And the disease of alcoholism is ever prevalent because those scars are still there. You know, I believe more today than I have ever believed that people die from the disease of alcoholism and they never take a drink. It is a family disease. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone, and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." And I said, "Well, if you want what I have, you probably need to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, well, he didn't believe he was that bad. And he entered a program called Adult Children of Alcoholics. And you know, folks, I've heard a lot of people throw a lot of rocks at that fellowship. But you know, it was in that fellowship, through a fourth and fifth step, that my son found the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, another miracle is that I had the privilege of 12-stepping a lady in Fort Worth, Texas. And that's the lady who brought my son to his first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that's the miracle we get to do here. You get to bring my kids, and I get to bring yours. That's the way we get to do it. James is an active member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and on January the 3rd, he was 7 years old, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, we got to have a lot of fun this past July. We got to have a family affair. See, we all got to go to Bill W.'s family reunion, and James and Kelly came in from Chicago, and Dave and I came in from California. And we got to celebrate sobriety as a family. We got to celebrate the miracle of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then in December, James married Kelly. And Dave and I got to be there, and we got to see it because they were in California for Christmas, and the Friday after Christmas, they got married. And you see, Kelly is a member of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, too. The miracles of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I came here, I didn't come to get my children into this program. But it's been by God's grace in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that it has become a family recovery. And you know, the disease of alcoholism is progressive, but recovery is progressive. It is progressive. And our family has begun to progress in the recovery of the disease of alcoholism. You know, if you'd have told me to make a list of all the things that I'd have wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that he's given me. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me a husband like Dave. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me friends like you. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the job that I have. Because you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells me, left to my own devices, I will self-destruct. The very best I could do for me, the very best I could do, was to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have breathed life into me. And today, I'm all the things I ever wanted to be. Today, I am the woman that I always wanted to be. I am a woman today that can love one man with all my heart. I have loved one man and been true to one man for 10 years, and I didn't know that I could do that. Today, I am self-supporting through my own contribution, and I didn't know that I could do that. Today, I am a good friend. When I say I'm going to do something, I do it. Today, I am responsible. You taught me how to be a person that takes direction by me having a sponsor. And by doing that, I have learned to be a sponsor. And I am a responsible member of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today, I know about commitment. And folks, if you didn't know this, commitment is freedom. The more commitment you have, the freer you are. And see, I never knew that. I thought commitment was something that kept, you know, held you down. I didn't understand that. And most of all today, I am the mom I always wanted to be. Thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have had a second chance at being a mom. You know, all I ever wanted to be was just enough. And today, thanks to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I am enough. I am enough because I am God's kid and God loves me. And I have been shown that through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, through the love that has been shown to me. And that's the way God expresses himself to me, is through the love and the people of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was in Center Hospital in Dallas, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer. And I end my AA talks with it because it's what this fellowship means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. Thank you.
Can you see why I fell in love with the tape? And she's not done nothing yet to make me disillusioned with my first love. I really feel like that I should give Polly an Oscar for playing Polly this morning. Never mind Sally Fields. Will you please join me in closing? We have a wonderful way of closing.
Father.